go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Better. Sorry for the delay there. I had to make an adjustment to my monitor. All better now. This is the horn. It is Titanic Tuesday on the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. And you are welcome to go there. Join in the conversation presently underway in the chat room. Use the listen live button there, or listen on your favorite streaming app, either via your PC or your streaming, your so-called smart device, your tablet, your smartphone, whatever. We like TuneIn Radio and Stitcher. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Well, the podcast address. WhiteRoadSociety.org for this subdomain, and you can get the podcast tonight. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Good news. We begin the evening having accomplished a significant portion of our fundraising, and we need raise only $85 for people, which is awesome. Just awesome. And thanks go out both, I like to make sure that we do get our, do put out the appropriate thanks to, those who help keep this all on the air, the plates spinning on the sticks, as it were. My apologies. I'm a little bit addled. Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays, there's some technical stuff that switch over and whatnot in between shows. And we had what happened there, for those of you who are listening to Dr. Bill, and why aren't all of you, we had a blue screen of death, a BSOD incident with the laptop that runs Skype. But thank you to Andrew, thank you, and thank you to Paul, both for getting us going even before the show went to air this evening. It is much appreciated, very much so. And so, you know, $85 is reachable, I hope. And I was reminded, or it occurred to me, you know, usually we try to raise $150 a night just to keep up with everything we have to keep up with to keep all this going. But this is going to be a short week because there will be no show on Thursday, and I will try to be here on Friday. But that Thursday creates it's a short fall week. It just is. So thanks for y'all getting out in front of the fundraising both of these evenings, and thanks Jeremy for kicking in too. It's much appreciated. All right, Titanic Tuesday. You know how last night we talked about the Titanic genius involved in raiding the Medicaid funds here in West Virginia, because it turns out that, once again, the coal industry is not holding up its end of the bargain. Yeah. I got another one for you. This is a dandy. And I tell you these West Virginia stories just because they help me feel a little bit saner. Now, we know what a controversy the American drone policy has created, right? Over at Crooks and Liars, ProPublica, writing today, this morning, boy's death in drone strike tests Obama's transparency pledge. Yeah, apparently we wiped out a 10-year-old boy in an attempt to get his elder brother, who was some sort of desperate type who hated America because we have home mortgages or something. I forget how it was George Bush phrased it. But, yeah, we did. And that's unconscionable. So, lo and behold, yesterday, a lot of states had laws go into effect yesterday. For instance, in this state, it is now a probable cause primary offense for a cop to stop you if you are engaged in handling, basically, your cell phone while you're driving. I'm not going to mount a big complaint about that. However, another law went into effect here in West Virginia yesterday, and it's a real Lulu, a Jim Dandy. Yeah. Here in West Virginia, it is now a crime to fly a drone over someone's private property. Can we all say the magic word together? Nullification. Yeah, you know why this thing went through. Whatever subterfuge was engaged in, you know why this thing went through, right? Well, it went through because a few months back, there was this giant hissy fit thrown. And, by the way, thank you. Thank you very much, Karen. Now, between you and Jeremy, we have only $60 to raise to get to the end of the evening. Wonderful. The reason this happened, this, you know, no drones in West Virginia, because a few months back, maybe a year or so ago, it was the American people were informed that in fact the EPA, or maybe the USDA, no, it's the EPA, the job killing, over regulating EPA, was a flying some drones over polluters. And freedom loving Americans didn't approve. So, and it's kind of weird because allegedly it's a slim majority, but there is a majority of Democrats in both the Senate and the House of Delegates of West Virginia, and we have an allegedly Democratic governor. I think we'd probably better put scare quotes around Democratic when we're talking about Earl Ray Tomlin. The Democratic Party in West Virginia is now moribund. It exists solely as a cult of personality for Joe Manchin and his cronies. Sad to say, but it's true. So, what do we have a lot of in West Virginia? That's right, we have a lot of sludge dams and a lot of mountaintop removal operations. At one point, the coal industry tried to talk the FAA into making commercial flights fly around mountaintop removal Appalachia so people just wouldn't see it. Because it is ugly as hell from the air. They say what they're doing is okay, but when you start asking questions like, well, okay, let's see it. Well, no, you don't want to see it. You just have to trust us. It's all right. So guess what? They don't want none of them EPA-regulating, job-killing drones flying over our good God-fearing toxic waste sludge dams. It's embarrassing, I tell you. It is. They done declared it's a crime to fly you a drone over somebody else's property. Now, even though there are legal precedents going back 300, 400, 500, 600, 700 years that establish rules regarding airspace. Even before there were airplanes, there were rules about the air above one's property. Yeah. But no drones in West Virginia. Now this really is an act of nullification. And the question is whether we the people, you know, the government, we the people, are going to tolerate this. My state government needs to be smacked. Because that declare... Morons. That business is... Of course, it is perfectly legal if the federal government wishes to fly a drone over, for instance, to take pictures of or research on or observation of a sludge dam or a mountaintop removal site. This thing needs to be bounced out and off the books in a drop-dead hurry. I mean, I'm so cantankerous that were I in a similar position, I'd be tempted to just have a drone fly over a mountaintop removal site just to watch the little idiotic coal bosses have a hissy. Or maybe, you know, maybe just to see Earl Ray Tomlin go to work on his aneurysm. Yeah, really, it is. Sometimes it's embarrassing. Very embarrassing. Yep. By the way, it's not just it's not just West Virginia. Florida, West Virginia, and Idaho. As well as a few other states have banned the use of drones. I wonder, however, what constitutes a drone. I got to thinking about this because I knew a fella, he has since passed on to the great beyond. I knew a fella who was a rather excellent builder of radio-controlled aircraft. I wonder if radio-controlled aircraft are now illegal because of the rampant freaky paranoia of the coal industry. Would be kind of fun just to fly one up there just to see them happen. Somebody's going to test the law. Fly one up over maybe what used to be Cherry Pond Mountain or what used to be Cayford Mountain. Just to watch the hissy ensue. Oh, well. You know this thing would have to be bounced out of court, right? It couldn't help it. You know, it's one of those when human beings first discovered fire. You know there had to be some idiot walking, but that fire is hot. I might get burnt. Can you see where something like a drone might be useful in, say, maybe wildfire fighting? Or making sure that dams that are made out of dirt and rock and hold back billions of gallons of toxic waste, how you might want to. Yeah. Unmanned aircraft. But not here where Montani Semper Liberi. You know, where mountaineers are always free. Under the subject line, eco-terrorist, Michael asking the question, what if the DHS, under a more pale, less Kenyan president's administration, said they were going to use drones to target eco-terrorists who are trying to disrupt the lawful practice of mountaintop mining? How fast do you think the WV legislature would run to repeal or amend the legislation? Just asking. Oh, that'd be yesterday. Absolutely. But the larger point here is that this is a dumb little piece of nullification, and it needs to be hauled into court and gotten rid of. I mean, the West Virginia legislature actually thought that it was within its purview to tell the federal government what it could not do with its own, with the property that belongs to we the people. The stupid is strong with these things. I'm generally not for firing missiles at anybody, but I do acknowledge that sometimes tools are exactly that, just tools. Jeremy observing from Vermont, it would be hard to see, let alone track, a small personal drone in a flyover. Pretty sure I heard mention of this in that oil spill a few months back where the FAA said planes and helis couldn't fly over the wetland that the spill was diverted into to hide the vast amount of pollution and damage done to the environment. Idiots. Yeah. I mean, they can be great big, or they can be little bitty things. Somewhere in the Defense Department, they're working on a wee tiny little drone that an individual marine company can take with it and fly it out to advance scout, and, you know, instead of putting human skin in the game, so to speak. It's fascinating. More thanks to go out. In addition to Jeremy and Karen, thanks to Brian, We're now down to $50 to go to get tonight's fundraising taken care of. That's wonderful. So I just wanted to tell you the drone story so that you... I don't... Maybe you live in a state that's banned drones, too. God forbid. Just remember, just because they've got a D after that, their name, doesn't mean that they're not walking around thinking teabaggy thoughts. Because the stupid ye have always with you. And it is Titanic Tuesday. Titanic Tuesday being named, of course, for that moment of profound conservative wisdom that transpired over in America's fifth smallest radio market, when a right-wing radio host declared that there are, what? Fossilized seashells in the rock strata of what is now West Virginia because of the movement of the Titanic plates. Yes. And the Titanic shrimp fork, too. And the Titanic cheese cart. And the Titanic flower arrangement. You get the idea. Smart ones, these right-wingers. Just delightful in so many ways. So you can expect stories that work within that paradigm this evening. Under the subject line, drones and phones, Robert writes in from Australia, so flying one of these, a Parrot Air Drone 2.0, is now illegal where you live? They'll have a built-in HD camera and GPS so you can program the flight pattern. They're quite small, about the size of two loaves of bread. It's been illegal to use a mobile phone while driving in Australia since day one. Well, you guys figure some things out ahead of us. Wow, that's a pretty cool little drone there. The Parrot Air Drone 2.0. That looks fun. I guess you can fly it over your own property, but you can't fly it over somebody else's. I wonder what the effective signal range is for these things. I mean, could you, for instance, be somewhere near a mountaintop removal site and go and have a look about? Be kind of interesting, wouldn't it? I'm going to have to ask somebody about that. Well, that is a pretty cool little thing. Air Drone 2, AIRDRONE, the numeral 2, .parrot.com. New AR drone. It's not air drone, it's AR drone. AR drone 2.0 features GPS add-on, high-density battery, and director mode. Wow. And I guess they're kind of made of, like, foam or something. And they cost how much? Fascinating. Oh, they're only $300. Wow. Can't fly them over none of our patriotic mine sites. And then Ron and Raleigh pointing this out. Drone definition. Might I suggest that a drone aircraft is one that has a way to relay pictures or other telemetry back to base? Failing in that, it should carry Hellfire missiles to be able to kill American citizens that have the temerity to talk smack about America overseas and any towel head we deem worthy of killing. Ron, I think you've got a future in bill drafting in Charleston. And things are stirring in Texas again this evening. Lo and behold, what have I said for so many years about Southern, and Texas isn't really the South, it's Texas. They like to be geographically themselves, but you know, it's part of it. Progressives in the South, don't screw with them, because it's hard enough to be one anyway. Well, they've been screwed with, and they're just not inclined to tolerate a heck of a lot more of it. And they're going to keep swinging until the Republicans have absolutely made manifest their war on women. In big, bold, you know, highlighted, underlined, italicized letters. Been getting a little reporting and some photographs back from Texas Betsy. Notes coming in from Beth in Texas. It's inspiring. It is truly inspiring. And this coming in, Isaac pointing it out to me, and I've got the New York Times account of it here as well. This is frustrating. The Obama administration announced today it would delay for a year until 2015 the Affordable Care Act mandate that employers provide coverage for their workers or pay penalties, responding to business complaints and postponing the effective date beyond next year's midterm elections. Assistant Secretary of the Treasury Mark Mazur wrote at the Treasury website, "We have heard concerns about the complexity of the requirements and the need for more time to implement them effectively." Oh, for pity's sake. Just the other day, back to West Virginia, Titanic Tuesday. Just the other day, I caught a news story about how a local Chevy and lots of other brands dealerships down in the Kanawha Valley, Charleston. Joe Holland is the name of the business. Had done filed himself a lawsuit because Joe Holland, car dealership owner, worships Jeebus. And he knows Jeebus don't want him providing none of them slutty women's that birth control under that there Kenyan Obamacare Act. No, really. Yeah. Because if you just happen to be a woman who works for Joe Holland, hustling cars, well, you ain't got no business having none of that birth control. Because that kills the little snowflake babies. I wish I was lying. I'm not. And sadly, Joe Holland will get more amens and hosannas and hallelujahs of support then he will get notes like mine saying, "Well, I know one place I'm never going to look for a car." You misogynistic bastard. I didn't call you a misogynistic bastard. But you hear about that. When you hear stories like that, don't you feel a little bit compelled to just let them know that you're paying attention maybe? Yeah, we've got a good bit of Titanic wisdom to deal with. Mark Mazur, Assistant Treasury Secretary, said, "We recognize that the vast majority of businesses that we'll need to do this reporting already provide health insurance to their workers, and we want to make sure it's easy for others to do so." So another year for uninsured people to just kind of cross their fingers and hope they don't freaking die because they don't have health care. This is, of course, businesses that have more than 50 employees. Here's another piece of Titanic chicanery. From a website called Business Insider, and News Ninja Gene sent this along, and it's really icky. Website called Business Insider, citing a report from the Irish Independent, which is a newspaper out of Dublin. Well, the Irish Independent got hold of tapes of an internal telephone conversation going back to September 2008 that occurred between a couple of executives at Anglo-Irish Bank back when it was falling apart and having to be bailed out. Let's give a listen.
Hello?
John, I see the fish for
you. Oh, yeah, okay. As my granny used to say, you must be therapeutic.
What does that mean? Can I... What's the computer, is it?
Therapeutic.
I was just
ringing you.
No, I'm ambidextrous as well. It means I can... Walk and land on water.
you can drink beer out of both hands.
That's the way that's going on.
Oh, so the bank's falling apart, and the bank executives are making jokes about being able to drink beer with both hands. Oh, they're a funny lot, those bankers are. Ain't nothing funny about this. So once they got past the part, they get down to business.
Ah, oh, jeez.
Tell me the big stuff.
Fun and games, yeah. We're down to the regulator. I tell you, we're down to the regulator yesterday.
Yesterday, fine, yeah. I got yesterday, yeah.
And we basically, they say we went down in the evening.
Again. No, we didn't.
Went to a tips and basically kind of gave it them between the eyes, and they were sort of pointing in different directions. Yeah, us, not us, but geez, you want to get on that. That sounds, So we went down.
Wait a minute, is this a Monty Python skit? Upper class Irish banking twits. So they're talking about, getting their bank bailed out. You got that so far? Yeah, it's precious.
And we basically said, in central, yeah. And I mean, to cut a long story short, we sort of said, look, what we need is 7 billion euros.
That's what I. To cut a long story short, I'm in the wrong. I'm just no good at this. These guys are... Oh, my God. So, to cut a long story short, we just sort of said, look, what we need is 7 billion euros. Chump change, right? Okay, so they've asked for 7 billion euros.
And I'm going to give you... What we're supposed to give you is our loan collateral. So we're not giving you ECB, we're actually giving you the loan clause that we gave them a term sheet and we put a pronoun facility together.
Yeah.
And we said that's what we need. And that kind of sobered up everybody pretty quickly, you know.
Well, you know, a horse walks into a bar and the bartender says, "What'll you have?" And the horse says, "I'll have a martini." And the bartender makes him the martini and thinks, well, you know, horses aren't very smart. And says, that'll be $1,000. And the horse pays the $1,000 and drinks his martini. And the bartender comes back over a little bit and says, well, you need, we don't get a lot of horses in here. And the horse says, well, $1,000 a martini, I'm not surprised. Yeah, I'll bet it did sober him up when they said, yeah, we need 6 billion euros. That'd make it... Hell, I get a $100 water bill and the blood drains out of my head. Just go pale. I mean, yeah. What we need here is €6 billion. Do continue, boys. By the way, the people you're listening to are a couple of guys, a couple of bankers. That's the one of them is John Bow. John Bow is the one who talks about being able to drink beer out of both hands. He is the head of the bank's capital markets, the Irish Independent, pointing out, of the Anglo-Irish Bank. The other guy is Peter Fitzgerald. He's the director of retail banking. He's the one who talks about being ambidextrous, meaning that he can walk on land and water. So everybody's sobered up because they've asked for 6 billion euros. I wonder how this is going to play out.
Yeah, so why do you need that and what's happening? And Jesus, certainly focused our minds, so I think...
I don't think focused was actually the word they used. It starts with an F and it ends in ED, but, well.
I paid 7 billion up front. This is 7, 7 billion in wages.
Yes.
So it's breached off, we can pay you back, which is never.
Got that?
Yeah.
Oh, this is too... Yeah, no, we got to go back and play that again.
And that kind of sobered up everybody pretty quickly, you know?
Yeah.
So why do you need that and what's happening? And Jesus, certainly focused our minds, so I think...
And it's paid 7 billion up front.
This is 7... 7 billion in wages.
Yes.
So it's bridged off, we can pay you back, which is never.
It's bridged until we can pay you back, which is never. In other words, we're going to take the money, you're not getting it back. And then what do? These fine, fine bankers... Oh, that's a merry good one. Oh, my goodness. We're going to take $7 billion, and we're never going to give it back. We kill ourselves. Oh, my goodness. Oh, try the veal. Don't forget to tip us.
Yeah, that's in the
terms
and conditions.
That's right.
Yeah, that's in the terms and conditions. Oh, that's right. Oh, my goodness.
So under the terms of saying the payment, we said no.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, they asked if we were going to pay the money back. No. Oh, my tummy hurts. Oh, from the laughing. Oh.
No, not applicable. Okay. I want to keep
it. So, anyway.
I need to change my underwear.
Yeah, what did he say? I need to change of underwear, did he?
It was a bit of that. Jeez, that's a lot of cash. Jesus fucking hell. And God, well, you know, the central bank only has 14 billion of major investment, so that'd be going up to 20. Geez, that'd be seen, and how do we do that? Geez, we'd need to give you, we'd need to, geez, you're kind of asking us to play ducks and drakes with the regulations. And
no, they're asking you to give over all the money. It's a stick up boil.
Yeah. He says, look, what we're telling you is that if we get into difficulties, we have 100,000 plus lump sum depositors in Ireland, all of whom will be very welcome. And I said, take it that the other Irish banks will not be able to raise any wholesale funding for how long you want. So
yeah.
I said, Bank of Ireland, their balance sheet is 200 billion and 45% of that is wholesale, so let's call that 90 billion and let's say that 60% of that is rolling in the next 12 months. So that's a success, that's 54 billion, take it but that won't roll. Okay,
yeah.
And I said, you can also do a similar sum for Allied and Irish Permanent. So I said, that's what's at stake, because these guys, even though they're big in our world, are minnows in the outside world.
Yeah.
So I said, that's what you're protecting. And I said, you've got to. So, anyway, that sort of got everybody's attention. And then we had Pat Neary. Pat Neary coming in. So, come here, lads, just want to have a word with you. Yeah, geez. So look, come here, I've actually got assets, decent assets that you can kind of play. There's stuff in there like this has value, you know?
Yeah.
And look, lads, you know, if you're going for this now, make sure whatever you get, sort it out, okay? You know?
What do you mean, whatever you get, sort it out?
In other words, whatever you get from the regulator, sort out the issue.
Oh, yeah, just make it fucking happen.
Don't
fuck it up.
Don't be coming back.
Yeah, don't fuck it up.
Aren't they just some jolly bankers? Don't have it all. Apparently, this is not playing very well. But don't think this conversation during that time period didn't take place 1,000 times over in 1,000 different banks. Wait a minute. What? Mr. Drysdale, we're going to get free money? Why, yes, we are. And how are we going to pay it back? Well, we're not. We'll clip it off the clampets. Thieving bastards. But there's some meaning behind this, because apparently it turns out that the Anglo-Irish Bank may have actually lied to the central bank. Mr. John Bowe having categorically denied that he misled the central bank, and Mr. Fitzgerald saying, I don't know nothing about birthing no babies or stealing no billions. And when are you going to pay it back? Never. Bastards. And this is Ireland, which part and parcel of all this got austericized. Good God. Yeah, thanks, Marty. Careful, Bobber. They'll be coming to take you away. Ha ha. Ha he. Hoo hoo. Yeah. Ron and Raleigh with a question on the Affordable Care Act story. And by the way, it's the same business class that knows how to steal $6 billion that doesn't understand how to implement the Affordable Care Act. questions? Crickets? Bueller? Ron says, let me get this straight. Corporations are saying the new insurance rules are so complex, they need another year to figure them out. If somehow CDOs, credit default swaps, and all this tax chicanery, like Apple pulled, is easy peasy. President, I'm sure, whose side I'm on, and it's not yours, folds up and gives them more time to game the system. That's about the size of it. Inspiring, isn't it? Yeah, me neither. Lord. And we've got, well, we've got some stupid out there. And then we've got some creepy. I'm trying to figure out some of these stories. I'm trying to decide whether they're Titanic Tuesday or more in prayer meeting Wednesday stories. Right now they're feeling kind of Titanic Tuesday. Oh, wait. Here's an exercise in Titanic conservative wisdom. It's summer movie blockbuster season, right? There's this guy who's got this sort of Charlton Heston-y half a smirk photograph on it. His name's James Hirson, H-I-R-S-E-N. And apparently he reviews the moving pictures, and he's always on the lookout for more of that creeping liberalism. I miss Roger Ebert. This guy is not fit to carry Roger Ebert's sweat socks. He's real upset about a new movie, White House Down. A humbling $26 million take has landed the recently released Sony film White House Down in fourth place for the weekend's box office. The movie's underachieving status is perhaps an indication that the public is not currently in sync with those in Hollywood who subscribe to a liberal... Wait a minute, I've got to do this right. Liberal agenda... and who tangentially pledge allegiance to the current administration. With a $150 million budget and an A-list cast, rather than being the enjoyable 4th of July blockbuster that the studio had intended, White House Down turns out to be an infantile, far-left fantasy dressed up as a string of Die Hard-style action sequences. This is a movie review. Sony Pictures and director Roland Emmerich have put together a film with a storyline that could easily... this is precious. Could easily have been penned by any number of the left-leaning hosts that occupy MSNBC cable television studios. Wow, you mean left-leaning hosts like Joe Scarborough? Oh, wait a minute. Serious! Oh, better now. Yeah, those left-leaning posts. The lack of originality in the film is jarring. Well, James Hirson, if you find a movie script jarring, goodness gracious, wait till you have kids if a movie script jars you. It's jarring. What those left-leaning hosts that occupy the MSNBC cable television studios could easily have been. The lack of originality in the film is jarring, considering it was only a few short months ago that another die-hard replica, Olympus Has Fallen, made its debut featuring a similarly politically rolfed plot. I've been engaged in the art of knowing words for several decades now. Anybody want to help me with Roleft, R-O-L-F-E-D? Is that some sort of right-wing Hollywood speak word? Or is that, I don't know, is it the verbalized, is it a logism for R-O-F-L, you know, or R-O-L-F? Yeah, I don't know. But it's a politically Roleft plot. The filmmakers in Olympus, though, at least appeared to make an effort to stay within the margins of believability by having their White House-seizing villains hail from North Korea. You know, because nothing says realism like having North Koreans take over the White House. Oh, quit eating those little spiny cactus, James Harrison. Then the walls will quit breathing on you. The skies will turn back from paisley to normal. Margins of believability. See, it's believable. It's marginally believable to this right-wing gasbag that one of these days the North Koreans are just going to take over the White House. Well, the Kenyans already have. Margins of believability. North Koreans. In contrast, he continues, because this is the part that's not even marginally believable, White House down creators have fashioned their terrorists who could... Okay. We're going to learn a little something about James Hurston here. In contrast, White House down creators have fashioned their terrorists to conform to politically charged caricatures of domestic right-wing activists who devise a plot to thwart the world peace plans of an altruistic president. And see, that's not even marginally believable. It is not within the margins of believability that gunned up, frothing at the mouth, right-wingers would ever do anything dangerous or mean or hateful or violent to the country. I mean, some right-winger would never take a rifle and shoot a physician while he was at church. Some other right-winger would never take a rifle and shoot another physician as he stood at his kitchen sink. That would never happen. That's not in the margins of... Damn it! It would be in the margins of believability if the shooters were North Korean. But it is not in the margins of believability that it could be American domestic terrorists. I mean, that's just not marginally believable. It would not be within the margins of believability that domestic right-wing activists would try to scuttle a peace plan or would oppose an altruistic president. That's not in the margins of believability. North Koreans are in the margins of believability, not Lee Greenwood singing, gun-toting Merkins. I mean, it's not within the margins of believability that at one point some right-winger would call for 10,000 people to get their guns and march to Washington, D.C. 2 days from now. That's not in the margins of believability, except for the fact that it's real. The premise, Hurston continues, numbnuts that he is, involves a domestic terrorist group comprised of mercenaries, neocons, and Tea Party clones. Oh, Jesus, they're being cloned now? The Clone Wars. Marching into battle with poorly spelled signs. Which carries out a paramilitary attack on the White House. The villains are prompted to engage in the nefarious activity because they disagree with the president's plan to remove all U.S. military from the Middle East. Well, I guess I don't know. Would the Paulistas stay in the market? Because, you know, they can't, they don't. Oh, Jesus. Jamie Foxx plays the role of the U.S. president, whose ambition is to rid the world of terrorism. That's a whole paragraph. That one sentence is a paragraph. In between, remove all U.S. military from the Middle East, and the next sentence, it turns out the elimination of terrorist activity is an easy task for liberal Hollywood writers. Well, it was easy enough for right-wing Hollywood writers to make it okay for us to waterboard anybody that we damned well had a notion to, wasn't it? 24? Anybody? Yeah. According to the White House down premise, poverty is the real reason. You can almost hear the snide coming out of the... is the real reason that the terrorism came into being. Economic hardship being the catalyst for the mayhem that has been plaguing the globe. But of course, that can't possibly be the right answer because it's not the right-wing answer. It's because they hate us for our freedoms, don't you see? With this line of reason, screenwriters have the troops being ejected from the Middle East and additionally have a comprehensive peace treaty being signed into existence with Iran. The money that is saved in the process will be used to eradicate the pesky poverty problem. Oh, isn't that charming? Poverty, he describes, as pesky. Thereby eliminating the root cause of terrorism and granting the sterling U.S. president superhero status. Sterling? Sterling? Wouldn't, and I'm just asking here in case I'm off base, wouldn't eliminating poverty actually go a long way toward making this planet more, I don't know, peaceful? When mothers and fathers don't have to hear their children cry out in hunger in the night or in the day, aren't they a little less inclined to join radical or reactionary groups that go out and bomb and or shoot or stone or whatever people? Or is that just me living in liberal fantasy land? That pesky poverty. That pesky poverty problem. Oh, darling. Do go and bring me some lark's vomit canapes, please. I'm writing about the pesky poverty problem in here. That pesky poverty. That pesky hunger. I wonder how this guy feels about Louis Gohmert's little conniption over crab legs. Probably entirely approving. When the on-screen terrorists begin their attack, Channing Tatum's character, a Capitol police officer, happens to be touring the facility with his daughter. The president is able to escape from the bad guys and ends up joining Tatum's character in his rescue efforts, ultimately saving the whole world from the malevolent scheming of the angry right. Well, somebody damn well better. Because they are angry, they are malevolent, and they are scheming. How many stories of how many bomb plots, of how many plans to kill this person or that person? It wasn't the most recent one. The guy who was going to build a van that he could just drive around through Muslim neighborhoods and radiate them and kill them that way? I seem to recall something about that in the news. Fox's character is no doubt intended to, remember, it just, and James Herson has said it, there's no doubt, so that means he's correct, because he has no doubt. And if the little screeching bats inside his head say that there's no doubt, by God, there's no doubt. Fox's character is no doubt intended to have folks substitute in, media-wise, our current commander-in-chief. Jesus, he can't even bear to write his name. The movie president is an individual of African-American descent who is a cool, nicotine-craving, basketball-playing, Lincoln-loving figure. Nicotine-craving. With a hyphen. still. No. His peace plan is also designed to put people back to work by enlisting them in infrastructure projects. I wonder if they're pesky. Annoyingly, the only thing stopping him from achieving the societal nirvana... Yeah, see, that means he's dismissing it when he envisions is an opposing political party and a number of conniving conservatives who are working together with what the film identifies as the military-industrial complex. This Obama that this person hates is very much different from the Obama with whom we all get rather frustrated, is he not? Still, the president is not averse to using guns and even a rocket launcher in his peace-seeking efforts. At one point in the film, he's able to escape death thanks to a pocket watch that Honest Abe had fortuitously handed down to him. The mastermind of the domestic terrorist activity is eventually revealed to be the leader of the opposition party, a boner-like character. See, he can type Boner's name, he just can't type Obama's name. Who actually harbors presidential aspirations of his own and is willing to use any means to achieve his goal. Once the villains are defeated, the president is able to usher in world peace. Unfortunately, what he is unlikely able to do is stop the word of mouth on this agenda-ridden flick. Really, what a numbnuts. It doesn't sound like a movie I'm going to... I'm probably not going to go see the film. But, you know, I got a note here from Marty saying, this guy's making me want to see the movie now. You know, it's Marty does. Summer blockbuster season. So far, only two for me. Star Trek and Iron Man 3. Disappointed in both. Well, at least you saved me the ticket price. I trust your judgment, Marty. Ron and Raleigh. Hey, Bob, go back and see if this goober-reviewed Olympus has fallen. Rolfing is a deep tissue massage technique. Well, see, that's where I'd heard it before. There's a Jimmy Buffett song that says, don't tell me that I ought to get rolfed because I love Cajun martinis and playing afternoon golf. It's from a song called We Are the People Our Parents Warned Us About. I fear we're getting Ron a little bit frustrated. Wait a darn minute. Name me one blockbuster where the world is going to hell other than Independence Day, where the U.S. president isn't portrayed by Morgan Freeman or Danny Glover. Darn it! Morgan Freeman, yes. The underlying agenda of White House Down. Well, they titled it that. But we really never got... It just said it's agenda-ridden. Is the agenda of White House Down to point out that, I don't know, that Repiglicans are colossal dicks? Because we don't really need a summer blockbuster for that. I mean, we got John Boner. We got Mitch McConnell. We got Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. So we'll take a little break and open the lines for your calls, 304-658-3333 or on the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn. Either way, works just dandy. This is Conversation Radio, only $50 away from making our fundraising goal for the evening. Many thanks for getting us as far as we are so far. This is the Horn.
Oh, Grandpa wore his suit to dinner nearly every day. No particular reason, he just dressed that way. Brown necktie, matching vest, both his wingtip shoes. He built a closet on a high-back coach, put a penny in a burned-out fuse. Grandpa was a carpenter, he built houses, stoves, and things. Chained smoked Camel cigarettes and hammered nails and planks. He was level on a level, he shaved on every door, and voted for Eisenhower, cause Lincoln won the war. Well, he used to sing me Blood on the Saddle and rock me on his knee and let me listen to the radio before we got TV. Well, he'd drive to church on Sunday and he'd take me with him too. Stained glass in every window, hearing aids in every pew. Grandpa was a carpenter, he built houses, stores, and banks. Chain smoked camel cigarettes and hammers, nails, and planks. He was level on a level, shaved even every door, and voted for Eisenhower, cause Lincoln won the war. Now my grandma was a teacher, went to school in Bowling Green, traded in a milking cow for a Singer sewing machine. Well, she called her husband Mister, and she walked real tall and proud, and used to buy me comic books after Grandpa died. Grandpa was a carpenter, built houses, stores, and banks. Chain smoked camel cigarettes and hammers, nails, and planks. He was level on a level, shaved even every door, and voted for Eisenhower, cause Lincoln won the war.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
I just had to do a little palate cleansing after Mr. James, right-winger, person. It's delightful the way this little community of ours picks up on each other's wavelength. About the same time as I was reading the note from Ron and Raleigh about name me one blockbuster where the world's going to hell other than Independence Day, where the U.S. president is portrayed by Morgan Freeman or Danny Glover. And then lo and behold, right behind that comes in a note from Michael. Clearly, Morgan Freeman's character in 1998's Deep Impact was also based on our current commander-in-chief. I mean, black president? Come on! And then Michael notes, I got beat to the punch. Ha! No, you didn't get beat to the punch. It's just, the wavelengths reach at, I don't know, different rates or something. Right? To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello, Edward.
Yes, I heard something I thought was rather amusing on the current TV this afternoon on Michael Shore's program, and they were talking about, and he had a guest on there who was a gay commentator, and the guy said that Marcus Bachman was in a truck stop when he heard that his wife, Michelle, was not going to run for Congress again, and he immediately dropped to his knees.
Hey.
I have a perverted mind.
No, I think it's a delightfully humorously bent mind, Edward. There's something else, and now it's visual, so we can't do much with it here on a radio show, but there's something else out there being promulgated. Charlie Pierce picked up on this over at his Esquire blog. It's absolutely hilarious. It's coming from the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi.
I've been in Tupelo, Mississippi a long time ago, and I never want to go back again.
Hear, hear, and amen. Well, if you go over... If you go over to the Esquire.com politics blog, the name of the blog post is, and you can probably just search this, Logo Fail. Logo Fail.
Logo?
Fail. F-A-I-L. Yeah. L-O-G-O-F-A-I-L.
Thank you.
It is a banner. It was something they celebrated 2 days ago. And the family, no, I'm sorry, it's not the American Family Association. It's the Family Research Council.
Oh, them too.
Yeah, I know. Got to have a crowbar, right? on June 30th, they were praying for America, Andrew. And they had a logo, and it says, it's a blue background with white lettering, and a you know the little like restroom stick figures,
well,
one of those, and it says call to fall, and then it says I'm in, and then underneath it it says on our knees for America, June 2013, and you're getting the idea now, but you haven't lived until you've seen the little stick figure fella. Who's on his knees and looks like he's really up to something. or going down to something. I mean, you get the idea, right?
Yes, I do. I remember when North Carolina finally made contraceptives available that you could get in the restrooms of filling stations, and it always said on there, for the prevention of disease only.
Right.
And somebody would always scratch out the word disease and put for the prevention of babies only. They did it all the time. Every damn restroom in the state was like that.
Holy cow.
Yes. That was long, long ago and far, far away. But that's the only place you could get condoms. Was in the restrooms in filling stations, in the men's room. I never saw any women going into the men's room.
No. No.
Oh, my. North Carolina, they're just driving me crazy.
With good reason. I mean, you probably still maintain, obviously from our conversation, some fondness for the land of your birth.
I certainly do, and I have friends that live there, for God's sakes. But they're working on their humanist association, and I hope it works out fine for them, and I'm going to join their association, even though I'll probably never go back to North Carolina again, because I'm afraid to.
Yeah, I can see where you would. I mean, yeah, we'll leave North Carolina to folks like Ron and Raleigh just to send in his periodic dispatch.
Yeah, well, bless his heart. I always listen to what he has to say. And oh, by the way, the crab legs and all that crap.
Yes.
With what's his name in East Texas. I don't like Alaskan king crab legs, and I don't like Dungeness crabs. What I want are the blue crabs out of the sounds and of North Carolina and the East Coast.
Oh, there's nothing like them. Especially when it's molting time or whatever, and you can get the soft shell.
Yeah, absolutely. I love fried soft shell crabs. I used to take my friends to this restaurant over at Atlantic Beach, and they had these wonderful soft crab sandwiches. And I like to take friends from Kansas out there because they would say, "What am I supposed to do with this?" And it was sort of flattened out, fried in butter, put on a bun with lettuce, tomato, and mayonnaise. Duke's mayonnaise, always. And it looked like it was going to walk off the plate because the little legs were sticking out around the sides. And they'd say, "What am I supposed to do that with that?" And I'd say, "Oh, you're supposed to eat the little legs off first." Upset the people from Kansas. And we used to go to Atlantic, which is a town there in North Carolina.
Oh, I know it.
Where Highway 70 ends. I mean, it either starts or ends there, whichever way you're going. And we used to go down there. Mrs. Smith, she was a family friend. And we'd go out to the bridge that connected Atlantic with Cedar Island. And it had a walkway across it. And we'd take a big tub and we'd take a rope and a piece of salt pork and tie the salt pork on the end of the rope, lower it down into the water, and we'd talk and everything in a few minutes, put it back up. There'd be four or five crabs on it. We'd shake them off in the tub, put it back again. Pretty soon, we had a whole tub full of blue crabs.
Oh, yummy.
Oh dear, memories of my childhood.
Well, and there are there's a seafood market down around, and I don't know the particulars. I'll bet somebody like Jim could probably tell me exactly how to get there. Somewhere down around the river in D.C., there's a seafood market where you can, you know, they'll bring you the big, you know, like a beer case flat, you know, the 24 can flat.
Uh-huh.
Just covered up boiled crabs and Old Bay seasoning, and just dump it out on the table, and you get busy with your little hammer and just sit there and pick crabs to your heart's content.
Oh yeah, that must be Baltimore, because they do that there.
Yeah.
And Baltimore makes the best crab cakes you've ever had in your life.
I don't know. I finally got around to having the crab cake over at the market lunch at the Eastern Market in D.C., and it was, I mean, there was almost no binder. It was nothing but crab, and it was just delicious.
Well, that's pretty close to the Chesapeake Bay, so yeah. I'm sure it was good.
Mighty good.
Well, take care.
Well, you do, too, and stay out of the heat.
It's cool here today. It's in the 80s.
Well.
You're in Dallas. Can you believe it?
In July.
Mmm. Hallelujah.
Praise be. Edward, have a good night.
You do too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I should know better than to ever, you know, if eat a big meal and then start the show, I just feel kind of, you know, and you got that go take a nap thing going on. But then inevitably, if I don't and I'm trying to be, you know, upbeat and perky, we start into the food porn. And I'm sitting here, I'm jonesing for, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. So, yeah, crabs. That'd be nice. That'd be tasty. So, I don't know. Any more food porn? Please don't. Although I did, I found some nice cherries. I've been munching on them. I'm trying to be healthy, just munching on some raw cherries. They're very tasty, but they're not blue crabs. So, this being Titanic Tuesday, oh goodness me, you remember Alan West, right? Now mercifully out of the Congress. He's real upset. Upset about little children being killed by gun? Nah. Gun violence? No. Upset about tens of thousands of Americans still out of work and unable to get access to unemployment compensation? Nah, not really. Want to know what Alan West is upset about? Now remember, Alan West is the guy who got drummed out of the military for torturing a prisoner. Just say it. Here is what Alan West is upset about. In a minute. Maybe. Damn it. I hate it when this happens. Sometimes the interweb tubes are not particularly cooperative. But we'll get there. We'll get there. It's moments like this when everything slows down and I wonder if we're still streaming. Yeah, we're still streaming. Good. Thank heaven for small favors. Nah, it's just tired old computer. We'll get there. He's upset, Alan West is, about how Lady Gaga sang the national anthem. they just run around looking for stuff to be upset about. She sang the national anthem at the New York City Gay Pride Parade. And she modified a couple of the words. And Alan West is all kinds of pissed off. And he wants to teach her a lesson. No, he said that. He wants to teach her a lesson. Because you know how she abused the Star Spangled Banner? She called it the Star Spangled Gay Banner. Yeah. Did you not? And she changed Home of the Brave to Home for the Gays. And Alan West, with that goofy-ass haircut of his, said that she had defiled our national anthem. That whole idea of ars gratia artis is apparently lost on Alan West. We are the land of the free because America has always been the home of the brave from Lexington and Concord to Kandahar. Really? Kandahar's in America, Alan? You've been getting geography lessons from Miss Teen South Carolina? Such as? In this week where we remember the 150th anniversary of the Battle of Gettysburg, and we know who you were rooting for, Alan, and the 237th anniversary, or at least... And the 237th anniversary of our independence is further evidence of the level of ignorance and disrespect some have for our national character. She and all those who cheered her abomination should be ashamed and apologize to every serving and retired member of the military. Even the gay ones, Alan? Even the gay ones? I mean, they're stupid. Marty, they're stupid and then they're stupid. As Marty notes, just read his bloody words. I'm in no mood to hear that fool's voice. I wasn't going to play his voice. I thought we'd just kind of, if I could get the damn thing to cooperate, I thought it might be kind of fun just to hear Lady Gaga sing the national anthem. I'm no music history kind of guy, but I was told once that the national anthem, the music to it, you know, obviously, Francis Scott Key did not write the music. He wrote a little poem, and it got set to music, and the music it was set to was like some sort of tavern drinking song. Is that right? I don't know. Maybe that's just an urban legend. It's damn difficult to know. And, of course, I guess we're celebrating, what, the 200th anniversary of the reason for the writing of the Star-Spangled Banner? Yeah. So, oh well. I guess we didn't need to hear... Lady Gaga, or the interweb tubes didn't want us to hear Lady Gaga sing the national anthem. Oh, well. More's the pity. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, Jeremy, what's happening?
Come on, you?
Get along, all right.
Oh. Hold on, listen, come on. Oh, hey, sorry. Hey, sorry about that. I was in a building and I thought it was a little... One second. I was going to say, you just mentioned one of my four trigger word syllables, that being Walmart or Alan West.
Oh.
I have a friend. He's a conservative, and he considers himself a teabagger. He is so proud of Alan West and everything he's done.
He's a patriotic American, tell you.
He started going off on how wonderful he was and everything, and I looked at him. I let him go for about 5 or 6 minutes until I couldn't take it anymore. And I looked at him, you have to be kidding. He said, what do you mean? I said, Alan West of all people. He said, well, yeah, Alan West, the patriot. He went to Iraq and Afghanistan. And I said, yes, and he got drummed out of the military, too. He did not.
Yep,
did. Yes, he did. Look it up on Wikipedia. I said, the guy took a guy out of a naked pyramid. I believe it was in Iraq, not Afghanistan, where it happened. Pulled the guy up, put a gun next to his head, fired it off, caused him to go deaf in 1 year permanently because he thought he had something to do with the bombing. Well, it turns out he had nothing to do with it. And then when the guy wouldn't answer back because he was crying in tears from being shot next to the head, he pistol-slapped him. In the end, the guy had done nothing wrong and actually was an innocent citizen. Just like a lot of the people we detained in Guantanamo and places there. So he's like, well, that's not true. Looked up on Wikipedia and read it off to him. He just kind of like started stammering, like, well, that can't be true. I said, it's true. I said, the Army told him, get out, and we'll let you out honorably, which they did, I think. I think I heard that because he got benefits for it. Or we kick you out and we give a dishonorable discharge. He left under threat of being thrown out.
Yeah, he was given the option of taking a walk or else taking a court-martial.
Right. So he did that, and I take it back. He did get a dishonorable discharge, and it was really harsh on him because he was real close to full retirement anyway, as I think a colonel. But they drummed him out in the last second, so he lost all of those benefits. But then he went and got a job as a congressman and got benefits. For
He's running the teabag hustle.
Right. So that guy right there, whenever someone says his name, I go into a rage thinking about him more than most people in general, just because of the responsibilities he held and how badly he mangled them up and how he'll say things like, hey, Obama's a racist against white people or something like that. He's an apologist for racist, that man.
Oh.
And you're right. Yeah. If he'd been there at Gettysburg, you're right. He would have been rooting for the South saying, get a massa, get a massa.
Oh, God. The level of stupidity that one has to engage in order to be a teabagger, I can't comprehend it.
I get it from the sense, and I say this very loosely. My friend and I both were involved in the same business. I consider it a hustle now. It was FedEx. We'll not go any further than that. But I think he's angry about taxes. He knows how hard small businesses get hammered compared to, like, say, banks who get $1 billion in loans and won't pay them back. And when I say billions, I mean multi-billions after that little piece of audio you played.
Yeah.
And so he felt like he was being hammered. So I think he sees taxes, and then he sees some other things, like he's also, go figure, a Ron Paul supporter.
Well, and why am I not surprised?
I know, and he hears bits and pieces like, hey, we should mind our own business, stop being the world police. And I think a lot of us agree with that part. But it's just like a stop clock's right twice a day, right? It's the same idea. He says a couple things that are true, then he goes off on a tangent on things that make no sense whatsoever. We should abolish government altogether and get rid of the EPA and any one of these organizations that control things and keep things to somewhat of a disgusting level.
I've got a Rand Paul story tucked into the stacks this evening, Jeremy. You might want to just kind of nick yourself in the neck with a Thorazine dart before I get to it. You're not going to be okay.
I'll do that, and I'll grab a tennis ball and a...
And the duct tape, right. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because...
But
it doesn't play well with the neighbors when you're, you know, when you're, like, screaming at the radio.
I just want to interject that, because, like I said, he's one of my four-syllable trigger words.
Well, Jeremy, you have yourself a good night.
You too, thanks.
All right. Our buddy Jeremy calling from Vermont. Jeremy helped out with getting us to our fundraising goal tonight, which now, thanks to Sal, we are only $40 away from. So thank you very kindly, Sal. Sal's there. Well, Sal's a huge help. Huge help, as are you all, for keeping all of this going. I am apparently, this is not an interweb tubes problem, I'm apparently having troubles with the computer here. It's not in the best of form. So I suspect I'm going to have to restart it. That's okay, though. It won't affect the program. It just all my tabs go away. Anyway you slice it, though, the lines are open, 304-658-3333. It is conversation radio, after all. So just ring up, and we'll have at it. Whatever it is you want to bring to the table is always fine. It's Titanic Tuesday on the horn this evening. If you want to get through on the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, is the account handle, whatever, for reaching the program. I've got a story here. Good God. I mean, you think you're used to it all, and then, no, it turns out you're not. You've heard him say, well, so we value recycling, right? We think it's a good thing. This story comes out via Raw Story. Comes out of Sugar Creek, Missouri. I spent a couple of years in Missouri. I don't know where Sugar Creek is. It's the story of Tony Shelton. Tony Shelton likes to what? Beautify her yard. She says she's big into recycling, and she's really interested. And she says she's really interested in recycling, and she's really big on self-sufficiency. Okay. What's causing all the uproar? Well, she recycled some old tires and painted them different colors, and was using the old tires as planters. I've seen this all over the South. You fill the planter in with dirt, and then you plant your flowers in the tire. Well, there the Sugar Creek Gummit. See, there's your gummit. Said that the tires would attract mosquitoes, and that they could, and that the tires in her yard with all the pretty flowers in it would lower property values in Sugar Creek. Now, I understand the old tires and the attracting, you know, breeding ground for mosquitoes thing, but that's generally tires that are laying around and aren't filled up with dirt. We'd asked her to put them somewhere else because there were quite a number of them, We try to keep people from accumulating tires because they retain water and they attract mosquitoes. They detract from property values in the neighborhood, too, also. They fined her for this. Gave her a ticket. You know, a citation. And she's refusing to pay the fine. So the unused tires that she hasn't painted and turned into a flower yet, she's now storing in an old truck, inside an old truck, away from the mosquitoes, yada, yada, yada. And she goes to court next week to find out if she's going to go to the slammer over being self-sufficient and trying to recycle. Good fences make good neighbors. As long as they're not made out of old tires, right? Yeah. Well, now that we've got things restarted, there's actually a chance. Because I'm just trying. My whole goal is just to get Alan West to hate my guts. I want to hear, because I mean I've heard some bad national anthems. I want to hear Lady Gaga's rendition of. I want to hear what a defiled. Take just a moment, let that roll around. I want to hear what a defiled national anthem sounds like. Because just as what Jeremy was saying about Alan West, you know, when you've had a pistol discharged next to your head and you're no longer able to hear and you're not guilty of anything in the first place, well, I'd say your hearing has been defiled. Some of your human dignity has been defiled. When, as Alan West did, you support things like transvaginal ultrasounds for women who simply want to maintain the integrity of their own bodies, that's defiled. I mean, this is going to have to be pretty shrieking and screaming and hateful and before that word. He keeps using that word. I do not think that word. It means what he thinks it means. Jeeves. So let's just see here. Maybe it'll play this thing. Yeah.
Thank you. Woo!
And it's my LGBT friends and fans who always said to me, I knew Lady Gaga when. Well, look who the star is now. Now I get to say that I knew you when.
Aww.
Now I get to say I knew you when you suffered, when you felt unequal, when you felt there was nothing to look forward to. I knew you then, and I knew you when, but I really know you now. Yeah!
Okay, my ear's been defiled by the screeching, but...
Oh, say, can you see? So proudly we hailed. lives and bright stars through the perilous
I'm going to finish it off and everything. This is a pretty respectable version of the national anthem, isn't it? Although, if she'd really been working on it, she could have said, instead of gallantly streaming, we're so gaily streaming. That would have been good. Just a suggestion, Gaga. I mean, from one hillbilly to another. You do know she has West Virginia roots, right? Her grandma's a hillbilly.
And the rockets rise alive, bursting in to the night that our flag was.
She's got her one of them rainbow flags. And oh, Alan West, I bet you are mad.
Oh, say, does that star-spangled flag of pride? Yeah!
That makes Alan West want to teach her a lesson. This young lady should be taken to Fort McHenry and have a pistol discharged beside her ear. No, this young lady should be taken to Fort McHenry and given a history lesson as to why Francis Scott Key wrote those words, those incredible words. Oh, lighten up, Francis. No artistic, no. Artistic license, not in Alan West's world. Maybe he wants to be Secretary of Anthem Singing. He is out of work right now. Or does he work for Fox? I can't keep up. Pretty good rendition. That's what gets the right wingers all upset, singing a song wrong. Needs to be taught a lesson. Ron writing in, I'd say that's a pretty good rendition of that old English drinking song. P.S. Play Jose Feliciano's version. Okay. Alright. Ron's usually got pretty good instincts for this kind of thing. Alright, we'll try it. Jose Feliciano, live, 1968. And yes, they got all bent out of shape about this, too.
the perilous fight. For the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, they gave
Yeah, okay, I get it. I know why you did, why you suggested that, Ron. That makes sense. Because this is before even Jimi Hendrix did that guitar version at Woodstock. And, of course, the grandparents of the people, or maybe the parents of, or maybe the people who are the teabaggers today, and were just John Birchers with little mimeograph machines back then. He's defiling the national anthem. Somebody needs to take him to Fort McHenry and let him see what it's all about. Why not? Good call. Good call, Ron. They love those Old Testament words like defiled and abomination. And there he was, a rutting on my Mayella. Jesus. Yeah, this evening is having a hard time not turning into an early prayer meeting Wednesday. But thanks to Beth for sending this story along. It comes from yourhoustonnews.com, the courier of Montgomery County. Members of Mims Baptist Church in Conroe, Texas, gathered alongside veterans and first responders in this year's annual Celebrate America event, honoring the U.S. and those who have served in the armed forces. The event featured Montgomery County Sheriff's Department Honor Guard and Rifle Team. Oh, lovely. And then State Senator Dan Patrick. No, not that Dan Patrick. Not the good one. This is knuckle-walking Dan Patrick. Served as the special guest speaker for the event. Patrick said it was a blessing to be back at Mims Baptist Church to speak again and praise the congregation for their devotion to their faith and their country. He addressed what he saw, and I'm just reading from the news story here by Jonathan Garris. He addressed what he saw as a strong connection between the founding fathers of the U.S. and their faith. Oh, dear God, somebody's been listening to David Barton again. Get the tennis ball and the duct tape out, because you're going to need it in about 3 seconds. There is no separation of church and state. It was not in the Constitution. Well, he's technically right. It's in the Bill of Rights, which became a part of the Constitution subsequent to their ratification. The First Amendment, Mr. Patrick? It's the First Amendment? I know. You blow by it all the time because you got to get to the Second Amendment because you got some heavy-duty masturbating to do. But, no, trust me, it's in there. It's in there. Patrick said he believes the founders used faith to define the nation's identity. You know, founders like Thomas Jefferson, who was a deist, and John Adams, who was a Unitarian Universalist, and George Washington, who was nominally an Anglican, but, you know, nominally. He quoted John Adams saying that the birthday of our nation is, quote, forever linked to the birthday of our Savior. What? Christmas is on July 4th now? The 4th of July is on December 25th? Huh? He further quoted Adams saying, our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. Does that sound like someone who wanted to separate church and state? I don't think so. Patrick apparently said, although this reporter says Adams said that. I don't think, I don't, I, no. John Adams is dead. Jonathan Garris. And then there was some blather about Patrick Henry. And then this. He also cited a Rasmussen poll that said that 40% of people agree with former presidents Abraham Lincoln and Ronald Reagan that America is the last best hope of mankind. How did the greasy-headed old B-movie actor get in there? I mean, Abraham Lincoln really did say that the United States is the last best hope of mankind. Ronald Reagan gets full attribution now for quoting Abraham Lincoln. Now it's Abraham Lincoln and Ronald Reagan said it. See how they work? Oh, it goes on and on. He referred to the women and the men who support them standing up for women's rights in Austin by calling it organized chaos and anarchy. That's troubling. Because if it's organized, it's not chaos. And if it's organized, it's not anarchy. Make no mistake, we are in a war today against God and country. I lived it Tuesday night in the Senate chamber when we were standing for life. F all. F me running. Not liking what somebody else says is the same thing as war. Bullets whizzing, bombs bursting in air, rockets red glare, and that's the same thing as one lone 50-year-old woman standing up to a bunch of patriarchal pricks. Patrick said he and other representatives would return to Austin and be, quote, at war again with the secularist society. See, they really do want to start shooting and killing people. They really, really do. Their trigger fingers is itchy. There are those of us who will stand for life, stand for Christ, stand for our great state, and stand for our country. We will not be shouted down. No, we will shout you down. All I can do for those who are against us is pray for them, because they are so lost and so blind. And he is such an ignorant fascist. He wants a theocracy. Straight up, he wants. Religious rule of this country. Robert in Australia noting, Bob, wasn't Lady Gaga singing that to her friends? i.e. not an official event. Sounded great to me. Crikey, you should hear the Australian National Anthem. Advance Australia Fair. I always thought it was Waltzing Matilda. I'm kidding. No one I've ever met knows all the words, Robert says. I always thought it was something to do with the carnival. Turns out it's about fairness and equality. Advance Australia Fair. I generally fall asleep during the second verse. That kind of stuff isn't a big deal out here. I got to figure out how to get a plane. I got to figure out a way to get a plane ticket to Australia. If that kind of stuff is not a big deal out here. I always thought it was about going to a carnival. That was just... So there is another hour of the program yet. You want a theocrat? I got a couple of theocrats for you. Stand for Christ. Stand for life. As we wage war. Stand for Christ and stand against all them vaginas out there. Please. We'll take a break. Come back to your calls. 304-658-3333 on the Skype line. Bob Kincaid Horn is how you reach the program. Still only $40 away from tonight's fundraising goal. I think we can do it.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
2 minutes past the hour. Little Adam and the Ants never hurts anything. Stand to deliver. Stand for cry. Stand for lie. Stand against the future. Yeah. Let's see. Let's go straight to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Mr. Kincaid.
What do you know, Bill?
Well, if I knew something, I'd be doing it, wouldn't I?
Yeah, here, here.
I thought I knew a lot, you know. The older I get, it seems the less I freaking know. That's the way it goes. That was a... we were off the air. I could tell you a few stories about that, but... yeah, I want to... I hope I didn't throw you guys off when I called.
No, that wasn't you. No, that was not you at all.
I was checking. Then it dawned on me, hey, wait a minute, this is a familiar number. You know, Professor, he gets me, man. He hits me where it hurts, things I knew very little about. I can remember being maybe in the fifth or sixth grade picking up a book that was laying around, and I read about Saratoga and a few other, you know, Revolutionary War battles, and that was all that was in it. You know, other than that, I didn't know too much. And I was trying to call in last night because I was looking for the name of a pop history writer, and it finally came back to me. This, what they told me about when you get old in the memory, you know, it happens, buddy. I hate that. But I forgot why I hate it, so, you know. No, I was David Halberstam.
Yes.
Because I wanted to pick up his book on the 50s. I've already been through that on audiobook, but because you live through all this stuff, and all the stories are familiar on the top end, you know?
Right.
And then when you get into it deeper, you, like television, man, I dig around the radio and I'm looking for old radio shows, and what gets me is when they... the guy comes on to tell you when this was first played. You say, I probably heard this in 50, you know. Because, we got a TV set by, I think, 49. My granddad was retired from the, he was a machinist. And he retired once during the Depression. And then in 41, they found work in a hurry for guys like him. You know, older guys who were really well, when they used to train machinists.
Yeah.
It's funny, I had a drummer work for me for quite a while who's still a close friend. And his birth name in the old country was Siegfried. And but his dad was on German U-boats. They were given a choice. He was said, he told his son, he says, because they call him Hank in this country, the son. And they said, Hank, I was, you know, made the offer by the German government, either U-boats or the Eastern Front. So, guess what? And it was bad. I've read statistics that out of 35,000 men, only 25,000 ever returned from the submarines.
Yeah, from the Kriegsmarine.
Yeah, his father was a POW of the English. And that's a great story. He was traveling across Germany, or what was left of it. They dropped him off in Bremerhaven. And he's looking to find his way across country. And he was on a truck rolling east to Berlin, where his family was from, that area. And here comes Ivan. And Ivan was drafting men into the Russian labor force. And the woman that was with him, who was a passenger on the same truck, said, oh, this is my husband, and blah, blah, blah. So the Russians let him stay on the truck. And they ended up getting married and having four kids. And came to this country. The dad worked at what the hell was the name of that little city where they built the where the Beatles were built?
Wolfsburg.
Wolfsburg, yeah. And then because I owned a Super Beetle and a Carmen Ghia, and then I bought a 66.
Oh, those little Carmen Ghias were nice.
What? Like those?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were sharp looking. My first wife had it before we were married. And when she was still just graduated nursing school, she took and bought that, and we had a good time with that car. And I bought a Beetle, a standard Beetle, a 66. I bought it in the 90s just to cruise around in it, you know. And plus, I had learned how to work on them, and they were pretty. You talk about a Model T as far as working on, that was it. But this world is full of stories like that, people you bump into. You know that somebody, my buddy said he took his father to see the Das Boot.
Yeah.
And he said his father would lean over and say, "Henry, I can smell the, I can smell the engine room.
Smell the diesel."
Yeah, it never goes away, you know. But he worked for GM most of his life as a tool and die maker, you know. Remember those things? We don't have them anymore, do we?
Well, not as many as we once had. That was the business my ache campaign colleague and buddy Bo was in back when he knew who you were when he was working in Cleveland.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
He's a tool and die guy.
I mean, there's a lot of people that bump into me later, and they'll say, I said, "Why didn't you come up and say something to me?" He said, "Well, you'd get through with the set, and you were trying to get outside to inhale some fresh air or green vegetation. I'm not sure which, you know, one or the other in those days. Good place to be, but I'll tell you, a place that wouldn't be too nice right now, 100-some years ago, a little place in Adams County, Pennsylvania.
Yep, Gettysburg, 150 years.
Yep, we reached that level. I remember when we hit the centennial, they put up road signs all over northeastern Ohio with GAR Highway, you know, and stuff like that written.
Grand
out.
Army of the Republic.
Yeah, it's just strange to see that, but anyway, I won't keep you, but I just wanted to say hi and enjoy the day off, if nothing else. But if I know you, you've got something to do around the house.
Well, yeah, we are gonna, but we're gonna have some fun. I'm a big believer in shopping the manager's special in the meat section.
Yeah.
So I found a pork shoulder.
Oh yeah.
That was going out of date on July the 4th, and I felt like it was probably an omen. So I'm gonna just.
What do you do with it, Bob?
Rub it. Put a spot, you know, herbs and spices, and rub it and let it sit for about 24 hours, and then wrap it in cheesecloth that I have soaked in apple cider vinegar, apple juice, and water, you know, just to keep it moist.
Yeah.
And then fire up the smoker.
Yep.
And pour the cool, you know, you don't ever want to let it get much more than 250 degrees in there.
Yeah, you want slow and low.
Yeah, and just let that thing smoke for about 12, 14, 16 hours till it's just falling off the bone tender.
Yeah.
And serve it up with some of that that spicy slaw that I've talked about from time to time.
Yeah.
And a little bit of homemade barbecue sauce. As far as I'm concerned, it don't get no better.
Well, I got pretty good with the gas grill and rotisserie. I do pork roast and. At Christmas time, I'd be outside in the garage with my brothers-in-laws and their wife, and we'd be communally smoking and cheap, you know, passing that one cigarette around.
Yeah.
Yes. And I would have gone to the West Side Market in Cleveland and picked up a tenderloin cut in pieces. And I'd be doing those on a grill, and the old lady would be inside doing crab legs and...
Well, just remember, Louis Gohmert don't want you eating no crab legs.
No, what was that about? By the way, I didn't catch the whole thing.
Oh, God, he's got these imaginary food stamp recipients.
Oh yeah,
who spend all their food stamp money on crab legs when hard working Merkins are standing behind them in line at the grocery store staring at their ground meat.
Yeah,
and wondering if they'll ever have crab legs again.
Isn't that a sequel to the woman pulling up into the store in a Cadillac?
Yeah, it is.
Part of the same book, isn't it?
Yeah, she probably, well, the person with the crab legs probably went and got in a shiny new Cadillac, right. By the way, Ron in Raleigh wants to get back to Volkswagens. He said, I have four VWs now.
Oh,
my first
yeah.
VW is a 1963 Karmann Ghia.
Oh,
I've had many since.
Ours was our Ghia she bought in 60, hell. She graduated nursing school, and, oh, yeah, it had to be, we got married in the 70s, so I think that was a 68 or 9 we had. But they were a nice couple. And of course, the VW did not take, that air-cooled engine did not take to emission controls at all.
No.
And that's why you don't, well, they were building them in Mexico for years. But they were, man, ask if he's got a 36-millimeter socket to get that rear, get inside that rear hub.
I'll bet he does.
I think you had to do that to do the brakes. You had to use a big 36-millimeter socket.
That's got to be huge.
Yeah, and a timing light was a neon light, and you turned the distributor by hand, and when it went on, you know, they were fun. I mean, that whole thing was, it bothers me that these kids know a lot more about other things that I didn't. Well, computers were not new. Although I had a job where one of my bosses wanted me to learn. They were going from punch cards to computers, and he wanted me to learn operation, and he said, and then we'll teach you programming, and my boss wouldn't release me, and I quit the company and delivered milk for a living. That was a good one, too. I couldn't go from one house to the other without some woman wanting me to meet her girlfriend. Are you single? Yeah. Well, I got this. Yeah. Oh, here we go, you know. Oh, brother, the time and the place. But anyway, let me clear the decks for somebody that's maybe a little more... but, you know, the things... You know, it bothers me sometimes that I listen to some of the callers and I say, what year is this? This sounds like the middle of the Vietnam War era with the same logical protests against what was going on. And, you see, I don't know, it bothers me because I saw that's the story that nobody ever told about Romney's father. I think you know the story I'm thinking of. When he went to Vietnam and came back and...
Yeah, and said he was brainwashed?
Yeah, he said he was not happy with what he saw over there, and he was leading the Republican polls until he told the truth.
Oh, by the way, I just looked here just to get an idea. I just found, Bill, I just found a 1971 Karmann Ghia for sale.
Oh, what?
Near mint condition. Original matching VIN numbers, everything's...
Oh, man.
$32,291.
Oh, God. Well, I'll tell you, they were fun to drive. I used to drive up and down this a street that is now called Martin Luther King Boulevard, and from Lake Erie to University Circle, it was just twists and turns and all these ethnic gardens with statues to all their, you know, different idols from the old country, and all these bridges that were built in the old days, stone bridges. I bet you got tons of them down there too, that, you know, in the back areas.
Yep.
Beautifully hand built, you know, and well, things are scary at times. I've been following on the radio. I've been following. I have a buddy who lives in Alameda, California, and of course. The Bay Area Rapid Transit strike is pretty rough out there. And, you know, the guy that built the BART in San Francisco, he's the same guy that built the Cleveland Rapid Transit. And they caught him manipulating, according to the newspapers, manipulating bidding on buses to favor GM over Flexible and Mack, the other two big bus builders in those days. And lost his gig, but he went out to Frisco and built that BART. But there's a strike, and what bothers me is the complaints by other workers about these guys have not had a wage increase in 5 years. And some of the callers would cry the blues about, you know, what somebody else is making. They want it all. No, they're not the guys that are...
No, we know who those guys are.
We know who they are, yes. But anyway, let me clear the decks. You have a nice holiday, and you and the family.
All right. Thank you, Bill. You have a good night.
Bye.
Bye now. And that's our buddy Bill from Cleveland, Mr. Stress, for those who know the blues. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Mark.
Hey, Mark. How you doing? I was thinking about you earlier today for some reason.
Who knows? I think when we have so much in common that we probably get connected That pork roast, I also buy the selected meat too, Bob. Yeah, what the hell, right? Who cares?
Yeah, I'm going to use it before July the 4th. I think it's going to be okay. The vacuum seal was still good.
I don't think there's any issue with it. It's, I think, you know, things are such high turnover. It doesn't really concern me. I don't come home and broadcast it to my co-equal, but what you don't know may not hurt you. But and it hasn't, yeah, especially if you're cooking out on the grill. You had mentioned Alan West, where he stumbled into. Well, yeah, he complained about Lady Gaga, which actually I would have liked to have heard that. I hopefully I'll get a chance to. And
it's over at Raw Story.
Oh, well, right on. I'll.
And I did eventually get to play it, but.
Yeah. Oh, did you? I must have missed that when I went and got a bag of ice. Bob, are you familiar with a website? I may be mispronouncing it. Is it Orenicus?
Spell it.
I think it's O-R-I-N.
Oh, Orsinus?
Yeah.
Orsinus? Yeah.
Yeah.
Or at least that's how I pronounce it. I think it's open season on pronunciation.
That guy's really good, isn't he, Bob?
From what I've read, yeah.
Yeah. He's big on the, I haven't read him, since I was protesting the Iraq war. I went to, and he's big on, race things too, racial, undertones and innuendos, and, I like to read the way he communicates, but, you know, I was home, in between projects and, My union hall is in Gainesville, Florida, and I would go to Gainesville, and I would in any case there were protesters near the university, and I happened to go one day, and I just went on my own, and I parked my truck conveniently. There's a gas station on one of the main corners there, and I parked it so I could keep an eye on it during the protest. Wasn't that many people there, and I had handmade a sign with a black duct tape with white letters saying "Stop Terrorism, Draft Bush Twins," and I'd gotten out of my truck, and I was just walking over there, and I noticed these guys get out of a Ryder truck that was getting gas at the gas station, and kind of made not a beeline, but they shot pretty quickly over to the corner. I thought, well, they seem to be going to, what are they going to get money from somebody, or they're going to say something stupid, and they went up to this dude, who I'd never seen before, in my life, and, he had long, white hair and a ponytail, and he had on what the Marines call a Creighton shirt. I think Creighton makes more than shirts, but, it's an expensive wool, gabardine, shirt that if a Marine wants to make a good career, he'll take his own personal money and buy that because it maintains a permanent crease. It's a real squared away looking shirt. I think they last forever. In any case, he had on his Creighton shirt with absolutely no wrinkles in it and a pair of blue jeans and the shirt hanging out. But as he turned around to confront these guys, I was just swooping in behind him. He wasn't confronting them. He was defending himself to see what they wanted. I noticed the ribbons on his chest. Now, in 1977, when I was a private in Okinawa, well, actually, even earlier in boot camp, you learn to understand what ribbons mean what and who's seen what and who acts like they've seen things and maybe hasn't seen things and who is humble about whatever your perspective may be. They can tell a lot about where you've been. Doesn't necessarily mean it's a character statement, but it can say that you've been in the shit. And when he turned around, that guy had some of the most hardcore Marine Corps unit ribbons on his chest, and the shirt was so squared away, I knew immediately it was squared away. And these guys confronted him, and there was two of them. Well, I think one of them didn't have a shirt on, so I said, fuck that. I went back to my truck and grabbed my hammer, which I carry, my 22-ounce S-wing, pretty well broke in, and I swung back over there, and I said, if this thing gets out of hand, I ain't losing. So I said, You need to go back to your truck and leave this Marine alone. And they said something stupid about the war or whatever. And I said, and then one guy goes, I was a Marine. I said, you weren't a Marine, dude, because if you were a Marine, you wouldn't be talking to him like that. I said, you're full of shit. You didn't even go to boot camp. I said, so take your nonsense out of here. And I'm giving the story a diplomatic, I'm doing the best I can. I was a lot more aggressive.
Understood, yeah.
I was outnumbered. I'm a big dude, but I don't like losing. So any case, they saw that I was bound to determine to possibly hit one right in the fucking head with that hammer. Now I'm not a crazy person, but when I make my commitment, that's what it's going to be. And they saw that dedication, and in fact, those two animals off, and they left. Well, the guy turned around later, and his name is Scott Camille, and Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young did write a song called Oh Scott, I think it is. And it's about Scott Camille, a Vietnam veteran who, when he came back from the war, was not convinced that it wasn't a winning issue. And then eventually the light comes on, and he realized that the over 400 people that he was associated with killing was inappropriate for corporate interests. And that's where his life takes off. If anybody wants to look him up, he's the chairman of Alachua County's Democratic Party, and he is a hardcore leftist like myself. He got out of the business. He was preemptively arrested, like George Bush Jr.'s preemptive wars. He was preemptively arrested by Richard Nixon's administration. There were veterans coming from all over the country, as you would know. They were coming to Miami to protest the Republican convention, I believe it was 72, and it so happened that the leadership of that veterans group were primarily Southern guys, Texas, Louisiana guys. Scott grew up in Florida, though he was born in New York, but he has a way of just, I could see where he would get along with down-to-earth, Marines from wherever. And but anyway, these dudes are all pretty slick, and they've got really long hair, and they've grown to be friends. And I think they were referred to as the Gang of Eight. And any case, they're put in jail. They're preemptively arrested on some kind of trumped up charges for some type of conspiracy or something. And they won that case, and they were released. But that the whole objective was to remove the leadership from their movement, and they were going to. They had their battle tactics for shutting that down. They weren't going to do necessarily malicious things, from what I understand or have read, and I don't do heavy inquiring because I admire him, just like I didn't ask, Marines that I knew that had seen a lot of shit. I didn't ask them any stupid questions, or when I was a young Marine Guard in embassies, I didn't ask CIA people stupid questions either. If people wanted you to know things, they might say something, but it wasn't ever my. And it's still, I still don't carry myself that way. But anyway, Scott is featured in a. Scott Camille is also featured with the group that met in Michigan, the Winter Soldier. And if people want to look at wintersoldier.org, Scott's face is actually the Marine in Vietnam in his combat. He was in a combat situation. That's the photograph they're using. He is. He's also what, as you would know and your last caller would know, is a forward observer, and you don't really have a lot of protection if you're found by the enemy, so you have to be very much on your game. You really don't have any protection. Same as a sniper, but he was, not sniping, he was calling artillery or airstrikes. But, snipers have up-close personal defense capabilities up to a certain degree, as well as they would too, but Scott, I'm very proud to say that I was invited to join the Veterans for Peace, and I do identify with Veterans for Peace, and I'm not a dues-paying veteran for peace, but I sign a lot of my Facebook sign-off things, which I'm not a big fan of Facebook either, Bob. I've said that before. I sign it Veteran for Peace because that's how I feel. But the Alan West comment. Your caller that you got immediately after him, nailed it, and I'm glad he's irritated, was irritated by him. Alan West was facing charges, and he had to resign or he would lose all his benefits. Did I tell you the story? I ran into him in West Palm Beach.
No.
I was,
charming.
I was coming back from Central Florida, going back down to Turkey Point to work, and I had gotten to a point in Palm Beach I had to use a restroom, so I off the turnpike, And I said, I'll just go into this Burger King. It's clean. It's quiet here. And the sun's going down. It's about 6 o'clock at night, 7. And I pull my truck in, and I come back out of the Burger King. There's hardly any customers in there. And just out of the corner of my eye, I see a couple vehicles over, and I see a person walking away from it. So I just, for my own awareness, I said, is that? And I looked through the back of my truck, Bob, through my back window, which is dented in my pickup truck, and I said, that can't be. I said, I got out of my truck, and as I got out, I looked at him in the clear light without obscured, tinted vision, and it was him. And I said, hey, aren't you Colonel West? And he turned around, and he was at a completely relaxed demeanor. And I said, hey, I'm a veteran. I just wanted to shake your hand. How are you? And I walked up to him, and I shook his hand because I wanted him to feel the strength of my hand. I've got very strong hands. And I said, listen, can I ask you a question? And he didn't know yet where I stood. He thought I was there to adulate him a little bit.
Yeah, hadn't clued.
Uh-uh. And I can be a little bit notorious for that. I also ran into a former congressman, Kirk from Illinois, and I hit him with some bullshit the morning that President Obama was sworn in. The fucker went home and had a stroke. Sorry about your bad luck. But any case, I said to West, I said, from one veteran to another, can you tell me why you Republicans voted against the GI Bill? I mean, just from veteran to veteran, just from, like, man to man. Why do you guys vote against things like that from a veteran standpoint? How can you support those people? I wouldn't let him answer it for a second. And he said, well, I didn't. And he finally said, well, I didn't vote against. And I said, but the party that you support did. And I said, matter of fact, John McCain did not vote for the bill. And I said, and he was running for president, and you supported John McCain, didn't you? And I said, and so he backed up, and he said, you need to find something better to do with your life. And I said, oh, I've got a job, brother. You're the one that's unemployed. And I said, look where the fuckers have got you eating tonight, bro. I didn't eat here. You're going in here to eat. You're going into Burger King to eat. And I said, and that's how they treat you? And I said, you don't mean shit to those people, and you want to defend them. And I said, you know what you are, don't you? I said, you know what people call you, don't you? And he knew, because I wasn't going to use the N-word, but I said, you're nothing more than a house servant. And I said, you're the guy that needs to get a fucking job. I said, I got a job. I work at a nuclear power plant giving you the goddamn electricity you're consuming. I said some other rude things. I lost my temper, but not like a crazy person, so I can't recollect exactly some of the quotes. I didn't threaten him, but I did confront him, and he did turn a lighter shade of pale. But I would just say one more thing about military things. When I was 19 years old, I was one of the youngest graduates from Marine Security Guard School, which at that time in the late 70s was still in Washington, D.C. It was called Marine Barracks, but Henderson Hall is right down the street from the Pentagon. And you don't really leave there. You know, you're like in a little isolated spot, and you stay and you go to that school, and they run you all around, and it's a controlled environment. But in any case, when I was there, Bob, I got promoted and I got a chance to choose where I wanted to go, and I chose Cyprus because I wanted to see a dual culture, and I want to see the Mediterranean. And from there, I would go from a Bravo post to an Alpha post, which is an upgraded post. So you got to go to a ship job, they call it, and then you get upgraded to a classy place like a Paris or something. So in any case, I got my orders changed because there was some kind of incident, and it involved Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, coincidentally. And they had changed my orders to Tanzania. And I said, literally that week, Nigeri and Idi Amin were on the front page, I think, of the Washington Post in a boxing stance. And I said, the guy, whoever was going to win this this boxing match, was going to get the rights to the other person's country, and I want to go there. So I said, I'm not going to Tanzania. And there's a part of me that wishes I did still take those orders, but I got myself in a little bit of hot water, and they sent me before a full-bird colonel that ran a school named Copenhaver, and he was a two-war veteran, Korea and Vietnam, and he had the combat ribbons, a very serious, stern taskmaster. I got sent to go see him, and I marched into the office a little nerve-wracking, and he said, young man, you know you're skating on thin ice. I said, sir, yes, sir. And he said, what seems to be the issue? I said, sir, well, I spent my civilian clothing allowance on a cold weather post, and now I'm being sent to a warm weather post, and we're not given a second allocation for a new set of civilian clothes. And I said, so with that, based on my, I would prefer to go to a place where I can use my allowance for what I was able to spend. And I said it probably a little more briskly than that at that time. And he sat back in his chair, and he said, he said at ease, and he said, what is your, who's your NCOIC? And I said, it's Gunnery Sergeant Langlois. And by the way, Bob, Langlois is the guy that brought back PFC Garwood from Vietnam, the guy that stayed over there for about 13 years after the war, who had to beat an army captain to death with his bare hands to survive, because they had moved so many of our POWs through the hills that they were dying on the marches. And Garwood knew that his days may be numbered, so he wanted to make sure he survived. And he killed a captain by crushing his ribs in a fight, and he drowned to death that night. And Garwood survives, and Langlois, 13 years later, is the American that's sent to pick him up. But Langlois had apparently, he said, well, let me check with Langlois. If you say you're doing okay, I'll communicate with Langlois. And I knew that the colonel respected him. He's one of the few Marines that had also been a pilot, even though he was an enlisted guy. He would ferry choppers around. And I liked him, and I think that he liked me as a young guy. So in any case, I get a chance, and I go to Honduras. I get to Honduras, Bob. I'm already immediately pick up E4. I've been in the Marine Corps maybe a year and a half at this point. And then I meet a family called the Stallman family, and that's what my whole phone call about tonight would be about, a guy named Michael Stallman, and S-T-A-H-L-M-A-N. It's in Facebook, and it's also on the Internet, as Michael Stallman was the son of a State Department career diplomat and had wonderful parents. I think the mother was Southern, and the father I thought was Southern, too, looking back, but I think he may be from Ohio. Very nice folks. And they were very kind to me, and I was away from my family, and they were kind of like my surrogate parents. In any case, Solomon's son was 13, and he would come to the embassy, and he would see us on duty. In that time, we still wore our dress blues, the full tunic, and they just changed that when we were out there, so we were allowed to wear the lesser uniform. In any case, we were squared away Marines, and actually out of the 25 detachments in Latin America, I charted out the numbers. I'm not real good with math, but I took all of our individual test scores as a unit and compared them, and we were second in Delta Company out of all these units in Central and South America. And we had a good unit. A couple of my buddies went on. One of them went on to become a JAG officer in the Marine Corps. Another one went on to become an Army officer. I mean, they were squared away guys, so young men. And the point I'm trying to make is Stallman, the boy, Michael Stallman, would come to the embassy, and he would see us and hang out with us a little bit on duty. I could tell he admired us, but he kept a professional distance. But he didn't miss much. And in any case, Bob, Stallman goes to the Marine Military Academy in Harlingen, Texas. And I didn't know what that was till he had went. And he did not ask me my opinion about being a career Marine, and his parents didn't ask me either, but I had a sense of guilt because of what happens to Michael Stallman with his life. He graduates from the Naval Academy with distinguished grades, a distinguished status, and then he gets accepted to flight school, Pensacola, graduates as an F-4 pilot, and at some point he says, enough with that, I'm gonna be a lawyer. And he went to a California Western and became a lawyer. I just saw this on the Internet, the second part. I wanted to see what law school. So here's a guy that's assigned to 29 Palms, and somehow I spoke to his wife eventually, and then to an author who's written a book about his life. And what happens is he's going to get out and become a professor in North Carolina, and he's at the end of his career, but he feels like he has an obligation to serve in Iraq. Now, he is apparently a Republican, Bob, and his parents didn't strike me as those kind of people. As a matter of fact, I think it shared with me that Mr. Stallman was a Kennedy appointee, the father, who's like 90 years old now. In any case, the son is a Republican. There are photographs with him shaking Reagan's hand and some other the highfalutin draft dodgers. And he's given a case to investigate when he's over there called the Haditha murders. And 24 civilians had been slaughtered by some Marines that were just innocent civilians. And the investigation is improperly handled. He's also caught up in an investigation in a large amount of missing money. And he was also responsible for some of the money to some degree, from what I understand. I don't want to misquote the facts. I'm not banging my chest saying I do know. Something involved with large amounts of cash. There was an investigation, and there was also the Haditha murders. Michael Stallman is left-handed, and he was found shot with a gunshot on the opposite side of his head. And according to that the guy that's a lot on Fox News, he's a autopsy expert, the forensics or whatever. Sterile doctor. In any case, he makes a comment on the case, and that it is very rare. It's not impossible, but his whole family thinks that he was murdered. So if anybody is interested in that, I was just in New York, right around the Boston bombings, and I had a night off, and I had just started poking around on Facebook, typing in old Marine buddies that I knew or any names. I thought, hell, let's see if I can find some people. Because I have a Marine Corps buddy that was a dairy farmer in upstate New York, a really neat Marine, good guy, who's now unfortunately in the fracking business. So I gave him shit about being in the union, but I don't stand for fracking. But in any case, I find Stallman's case, and it kind of broke me down, and I started crying that night. And I got on Facebook, and I asked for somebody to please communicate with me. And about a week later, I got a couple of subtle phone calls, and I ended up kind of getting screened before I was allowed to speak to his wife. Now, I did speak to the wife. I just needed to console my own feelings because he was a good family, came from a good family, a good person, and his parents treated me like a son. And I was only 5 years older than him. He was 45 when he died. He was the highest-ranking U.S. Marine killed in Iraq. He was a full-bird colonel selected for Brigadier General. He's buried, I think, at Brigadier General. As you would probably know as an officer, I guess you get promoted when you die one rank. But it's an interesting case if anybody wants to check that out.
It is indeed a fascinating case. I remember when it initially happened, and it was immediately put out as a non-hostile incident, as a suicide. But it didn't. It doesn't add up. It doesn't add up.
You know what also doesn't add up is the last gentleman from Ohio spoke about David Halberstam dying in a car crash, kind of like the car crash that killed the 31-year-old investigative journalist, Bob.
Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting how these aggressive people that fight the truth just always seem to step on landmines. Well, Bob.
Well, you got a big bless your heart for your Alan West account too. Jeremy dropped a note in from Vermont and said, "Bless Mark, I love the Alan West story."
Yeah, that's the cleaned up version of it, and I do apologize for using a little rough language. Sometimes, sometimes the construction worker union, ex-Marine, comes out, but I can be rougher than that, unfortunately. But it works when I need it, and I know you're a big guy, you can handle it, but. I don't mean any disrespect to any of the listeners.
No, it's understood. It's understood.
I do. I wouldn't serve with any other group of military people because of the dedication and the pressure they put on each other. It's a 100-to-1 ratio for officer to enlisted. And when the Marines came out of the rescue effort of the U.S. Army in the Korean War, and they were marching down the hills from Incheon to the from the Frozen Chosen to Incheon to depart, there was a bunch of Army generals and some Marine generals standing around, and they said, "Why do your sergeants look like our captain?" And it is explained to people that we are given a lot of pressure and responsibility on us because we'll have one officer for 100 enlisted men, whereas other branches of the service have more. So it's a neat thing, and it's the neat level of responsibility that you could not get anywhere else. I do think that the war in Iraq was wrong. Dinner's on the table, but just also ask the listeners to take a look at a Marine Corps general that worked for John F. Kennedy, and he also worked for Smedley Butler in China. He won the Medal of Honor. His name is David M. Shoup, S-H-O-U-P, and he was John F. Kennedy's lead military advisor. And when asked, he told President Kennedy, don't put boots on the ground in Southeast Asia. And, of course, they killed Kennedy. Brown and Wink did real well near Halliburton today. And I thank you for always being.
My pleasure, Mark. And you just got a note in from Jan and Jerry. They write, "Mark makes me proud to share this country with him." So, yeah, what you say means things. Mark, have yourself a very good evening. If supper's ready, enjoy it.
Happy July 4th, Bob.
You too, Mark. You too. Our buddy Mark, calling from Florida. Mark always has something real. And, you know, I say things like, why won't anybody say, you know, just talk to some of these hateful, insane people as they deserve to be talked to. Well, Mark does that. It's possible that maybe some of the gentlemen and gentle ladies of the Congress could learn a thing or two from listening to Mark's calls. It is 17 minutes before the hour, and Texas Betsy just checked in from the State House in Austin. She's actually there. She says they're taking testimony until midnight. I'm on the list, but I'm about around number 1,300-ish, and they're on number 23. Her son and his significant other have been there. Thousands of pro-choice orange, Betsy reports, but also church buses full of anti-choice. Church buses. That would be church buses going to the Texas State Capitol with tax-exempt church funds to do political work. Look, it's not that hard. Pick one. Pick the other. Either way's fine by me. You want to do religion? Do religion. Get your tax exemption. Get your federal welfare, because that's what tax exemption is. Get your welfare. Stay out of politics. Or give up your tax exemption. Get into politics. And do your damnedest. But not both. This is not that difficult a concept. Politics is nasty and venal and tawdry. And religion is supposed to be uplifting of spirit and soul and focused on a better world to come. They do not mix. Jan and Jerry asking, what happened to separation of church and state? Make them pay taxes now. But remember, you got State Senator representing Dan Patrick talking to some the gospel center and herpetological park down near Houston and telling them that there is no such thing as separation of church and state. They like to say that. I've been hearing that. Oh, God, I've probably heard it for 30 years. No such thing. It ain't. The word separating church and state ain't in the Constitution. No, those words aren't but the concept is. And yes, we do have a right to freedom from religion. Some of us consider that the only way to really experience freedom is to be free from religion. Got a note back in a little bit ago from Sergi. Going back to my reference to Louis Gohmert and his Jeremiad against po-folks eating crab legs. What a dumbass. Sergi writes in, subject line, crab legs. You know, Bob, speaking as someone from a food stamps background, I, nor anyone else I know who is in the food stamp crowd, even likes crab. We're fried catfish people. Hell, aside from catfish, seafood to me is nasty as all hell. Signed, Sergi, fishy business means it's time for a shower, Kyle. Oh, see, that's one of the things I do miss. Two things. There are two things to miss. Well, lots more, too, probably. But two, culinarily, there are two things to miss here in almost level West Virginia. One, a healthy, competitive barbecue market. Just no good barbecue to be had. Just ain't. Unless you do it yourself. Two, no fried catfish places. No baked catfish places. No broiled catfish places. You get far enough south and there's catfish places all over the place. And it's good. Oh, it's good. But I do part company with Sergi because, yeah, I like crab legs okay. I love scallops. Shrimp? Yep. Crabs? Yep. But no, I'm right there on the catfish. And by the way, I've got a tartar sauce recipe that's the best I've ever had. I don't like real sweet, cloying tartar sauce. I've got a recipe that relies on ground cabbage, onions, a little bit of green pepper, not sweet relish cubes, but dill cubes, lemon juice, mayo, and a little sour cream. And it is awesome. Just yummy. Been going on all night. At least we're 11 minutes away from wrapping up this Titanic Tuesday. And, I don't know, find something to snack on. Maybe get back into that bag of cherries. Trying to be a little responsible, healthy here, for heaven's sake. Yeah, that's true, Marty. According to Rick Goodhair Perry, we have no such freedom from religion. Then again, according to Rick Goodhair Perry, the earth is just slightly younger than the actual written recipe for bread and beer. He's not going to win any National Geographic intelligence quizzes. So hopefully we will have, by tomorrow's program, we will have some sort of a report from Texas Betsy on the whole event, circumstance, struggle today at the Capitol in Austin. They're going to take testimony until midnight. Does that mean they're also going to take testimony from fundies and wing nuts and snake handlers and floor rollers and Uh, So we are wrapping up the program for tonight. And we are at present $40 short of our fundraising goal, which makes it a little bit difficult if we have to start tomorrow at 190 because there's no show on Thursday and then Friday's up in the air. I'll try to be here, but Friday's up in the air. A reminder, Dr. Bill O'Brien will be back with his Wednesday edition of the Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific tomorrow. If you have never listened to Dr. Bill, and if you have a passion or an interest in real, honest-to-goodness learning and real, honest-to-goodness thinking and stuff that will just send you off considering things from perspectives that you've never considered before, Dr. Bill is somebody you want to, I mean, you know, go and just grab the podcast feed over at whiterosesociety.org. Or if you want to, drop me a note and grab it out of the horn drop box. I put both I put every day's shows of Dr. Bill's and mine in the drop box in case there's ever a mistake. yeah, there's Richard in the chat room. Dr. Bill makes me stoned. And he means that in a very good way, Richard does. Because it feels like somebody's giving your brain a deep tissue massage. Is that a Rolf? And suddenly we find ourselves back at the beginning of the program. So, Dr. Bill, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, and via podcast. And then, of course, we'll roll back around and have at it for prayer meeting Wednesday. And, oh, goodness gracious, we got some prayer meeting Wednesday material for tomorrow. So I guess that pretty much takes care of the day, of the evening. I think after showtime, I'm going to go in and make some of that hot slaw to go with the barbecue. It's better after it sits for a while. Kind of pickles itself. Yummy. The Lord provides Bob what, Stockton Larry? We shall see. We shall see. So thanks, everybody, who makes all of you who make this happen. It doesn't happen without you. We have made up, we make up shortfalls as best we can here, but we are much more secure thanks to everything that you do. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room, although Texas Betsy is doing patriotic work at the Texas State Capitol this evening. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. And thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ben Birch, you might recall, is almost single-handedly responsible for saving progressive radio via the White Rose Society on the Internet since 2002. And that's a long time to do that and never, ever send a single human being a bill for all he does. Thanks, of course, go out to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and ACHEACT.org. Remember, there's a challenge on the table from Billy, who wants people to call Representative Chris Van Hollen's office and politely encourage him to sign on to the ACAC. Once you have confirmed via email to me, which I will confirm to him, 5 calls, he's got $25 to contribute to the horn and $25 to contribute to the 8th campaign. Cool. Huh. And with tomorrow, I don't know. I think you can probably reach the offices tomorrow. They won't be shut down for the Fourth of July holiday yet. The Independence Day holiday. So back tomorrow night with prayer meeting Wednesday. Y'all have a wonderful evening, or day, or morning, depending on where you are on this little blue-green marble hurtling through the universe. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.